Okay, let's get going. Welcome. Any questions from last week? I have a question for you. Who likes chocolate? All right. Yeah. If you haven't done so, come up and sign in and get your cookie. We'll have a break in about 15 minutes, so you can do it then. Another question, who has a car on campus and might be willing to drive students to the some of the faculty facility tours? Who has a car? Okay, that's good. I might be in touch with you later on to escort students to the our field trips. Yes. Yes. Yeah. We're going to start with a review of a project from a student from last year to show that students can succeed in working on team projects, and so that you feel more comfortable in working on projects. John, could you come down?
So last year, I was a member of this class, and I worked for the RAFT group, which was founded by Greg Brown, and the research area for teaching group. And what we eventually designed at sort of the end of it was a few low-cost educational tools for special needs children that helped them learn important mathematical concepts. And overall, the experience of working within this class to develop something along those lines was a wonderful experience for a variety of reasons. And I'm going to sort of go over those within this short speech. First, the design process within the class is kind of great because what you're doing is you're essentially helping someone in a way that is like very personal and very customized to that particular group, and it kind of felt great to sort of share that because if you develop something that's really good, and I'm sure that like all the projects will do that because you know of the excellent teaching staff such as Dave and everyone else who's sort of involved in the class and the community, the people will sort of get like that you're sort of developing for will get sort of an immediate benefit from it. It's also great because I had like a great group dynamic, and that's sort of very important with a project like this because the people within it sort of have to be able to sort of embrace multiple perspectives along the design process in order to develop something that's new and also sort of fitting for the group that you're working for. It's also great, like a great class, because it's very hands-on. And it's very interactive, but it's also like very dynamic. And what I mean by dynamic is that from sort of the start of the class to the end of it, like what we sort of were thinking about doing at the start was completely different from what we actually did. And I feel like that kind of made it all the better because the idea sort of developed out of different things that we researched and experienced along the way. So it kind of gave it sort of a nice organic quality to sort of the whole process. Also, it was kind of an excellent experience, an excellent way to gain experience in engineering, which is very useful in today's sort of like modern high-tech world. But it's kind of special in the way that, or special in the sense that what you're doing immediately benefits or at least benefits people in a way that they gain a lot of it's a very positive benefit to those people. And that's kind of what I really liked about it. And finally also, Dave, he's really great with being very helpful in sort of connecting you with resources and also like members of the community that you can sort of utilize to sort of move your project along and ultimately create like the wonderful solutions that I'm very confident all of you will do throughout this quarter. So does anyone have any quick questions for me about this?
Gave us the affect, but you didn't tell us what you did.
Oh, we developed low-cost solution, like low-cost teaching teaching kits for children, special needs children, and it was sort of to help them learn like math concepts. So it was like a little kit. So when you go to the Raft building itself, what Raft does is they make little kits out of various recycled components that Greg sort of finds from businesses and such. And what we did was we took a lot of those and we basically formulated them in ways that kids would learn, like simple algebra functions and things like that. And this was sort of helpful with kids who had various like motor and cognitive issues, and that's what we were sort of tapping into. But essentially, it was also kind of nice because it was a kit that we were able to sort of hand someone, and then they could pick up and easily utilize based upon the instructions that we created and also the materials that it had in it. I'm sorry I didn't go through that. Cool. Any other?
Thank you, John. Okay.
Okay, moving on. Here's all you guys, and I know some of these pictures were taken to apply to Stanford, so that might have been pretty old, and that might look sort of silly, but you should maybe extrapolate ahead, you know, to what I look like now and what I look like as a kid. So if you can do that analogy and figure out, you know, what am I going to look like 40 years from now? You know, that could be fun. So I've been asked a number of times, I really don't have time this quarter to work on a team project, and can I take the course again next year? And the answer is yes. You can take the course now for one unit, and you can actually work on an assistive technology project next quarter in this class or as independent study anytime. And you can work on, they have assistive technology projects that you can work on in CS194 and perhaps ME113. There's also a summer opportunity called SURI for undergraduate mechanical engineering students to work on a project and actually get paid a stipend to do that. And I've had one student this past summer and two students the summer before, so that's an option for you. And, of course, all this independent study stuff you need to get approval from the faculty, your faculty advisor, and I'll be happy to provide more information if that would be helpful. If you have a time conflict, if you want to take this class and you just have another class at the same time, there is an option that you can see me about that might be able, you might be able to be in two places at once. That's sort of magic. Okay, Raft projects, you know, I thought that was going to be a very popular project for students this year, but it's only moderately popular. So it's okay if several teams work on Raft projects. And actually, when you look at it, there's three different kinds of projects that I see under the umbrella of Raft projects. And one is to create, like John did and his team did, make new accessible activities. Another possibility with a Raft project is to take existing activities that they already have for sale and somehow make them more accessible. So do something between the student and the activity to make it easier for them to use it. And the third one is something to just generally address the needs of learners with disability, kids with disabilities. you know, what Ref wants are these little kits, inexpensive kits that they can sell at their facility, but there are certainly lots of other problems that kids with disabilities have that you can address as a project. It's also okay for teams to share tasks. If you have a car and you're both going to visit people at Raft or some other place, you can join in doing that. You can certainly interview together, but if you're working on individual projects, you know, your project is going to have to be your own, ultimately. Project selection. Last Thursday we heard all the project offerings, and that went pretty well. And if you have questions, you know, contact the person who suggested the project for more information. And it looks like everybody has emailed me their project preferences, and they're on the website, so you can take a look and see what other people have chosen. And it's basically up to you guys to take the initiative, see what other people have chosen, figure out if there's some commonality there, and get together and form teams. Now, there isn't going to be enough people to do every single project. And there may be people who have to join to work on a project that they haven't selected as one of their three top projects. So I encourage you to, you know, offer to have a little bit of compromise in that regard. And by this Friday, I would hope that all the people working on teams will form teams and selected a project and tell me what that is. Who are the team members? What's the name of the team? The name of the project? And maybe you can wait a little bit for naming, you know, the physical entity of your project. Any questions about this process? I'll be happy to mediate if you have questions about some of this. I just want to go over the engineering design process once again. Most important is to understand the problem, and the way to do that is to talk to the person who has the problem. That's pretty obvious, but a lot of engineers don't do that, and I fall into that category. When I got started, I thought I knew what people with disability needed, and that wasn't always the case. You have to really determine what's needed, and this will have to come from you. Now, a lot of people with disabilities will say, I know exactly what I need. It's got to be this big, it's got to be this color, and it's got to work like this and that and the other thing. But that is only their perspective, and they may not be engineers. And certainly, you know, you having the background as engineers and other people might have different perspectives, so you can come up with different ideas about how to solve the problem. It's important to figure out what other people have done already, if that's been successful or not, why it isn't successful. So you need to go on the internet and do a little bit of a search. And then with all that information in hand, then you can get to the fun part, which is brainstorming. So you come up with lots of different ideas, wild ideas, and Gail will talk a little bit about that today. And ultimately, you want to select a concept and run with that. And by running, I mean you look at fabricating prototypes really quickly. Fabricate, test them, evaluate how well they work, and repeat. Now, in all situations, the first prototype you make, I can guarantee, is not going to work. And I've done a little bit of asking people about, you know, how many prototypes it takes to come up with a real product. And I asked the Rota Mobility people about one of their products, and it said it took them 8 prototypes to get to where they were. So keep that in mind, that you're not just building and trying to make one prototype work. You're trying out one technique, throwing it away, trying the next one. In fact, I'm going to grade you on the process and how many failures you've had. So keep track of all your failures because you're going to be graded on them. The more failures you have, the better, actually. After 8 weeks, you're going to report your results and present them to the class, and finally reflect on the experience. And the engineering design process does not include building your device because somebody else said that's the way you should do it. If you tell me that, you're going to fail the course. So you don't want to do that. If you make incremental improvements on an existing design, that doesn't fly either. You have to come up with something new. You want to be able to utilize all your project resources, team skills, people like me, other people that are, you know, here in the community to maximize your output. But ultimately, your team makes and will have to justify their own decisions. So keep that in mind. If you say, I did it this way because somebody told me to do it, that's not going to fly. Okay. Individual projects. I've already talked to several people who are working on individual projects. And just very quickly, there's three options to do a paper report on a topic that benefits somebody with a disability, do a paper design or a CAD design of a device, or for people whose background isn't in engineering, work on a work of art, which could be like a neat video and stuff like that. And there's some examples of this on the internet. And what you want to do is interview somebody with a disability, and that could be a family member, a friend, somebody in the dorm, a classmate, somebody who's attending this class, or I can suggest other people, some people at the VA, people at the Blind Center, and some others. So if you can't, and there's also students that are associated with the Office of Accessible Education, so you might talk to them. And basically you want to interview them and figure out, you know, how they've been successful, what problems they have, and follow on with that. Okay. Project documentation. Now, when I went to school, we didn't really do lab notebooks. So, and in this course, I don't expect you to do that. But other courses do. So if you have a course like, if you're going to be taking like ME13 where they do require lab notebooks, you might use this course as practice in doing the lab notebook. But I do really encourage you to take lots of photos and short videos that will document the process that you're using, because they take up space in your report, which is useful because you don't have to write as much, okay? So that's neat. And I can use them to advertise a class to students next year. So there's a motivation for me. And certainly a short video says a lot, just as a picture says a lot as well. So that's that. I want everybody to, who's working on a project, individual or team, to know that there's a time limit. This is only an 8-week course, and maybe there's only 7 weeks left. And the people who are working on team projects, there's a midterm coming up, so you want to be diligent in working every week, you know, on your project and reporting what you've done to me, so I can monitor your progress, because I'm a part of every team, and team members should know what each other is doing. Okay. I mentioned assistive technology market about the lack of a well-defined mass market means that companies serving individuals with disabilities are small and their products are expensive. Well, that's sort of bad news, right? Well, what can companies do to mitigate some of this? And the answer is they can build an assistive technology device that has a wide market appeal, so it appeals maybe to people other than people with disabilities, and including, you know, senior citizens and people who are gamers. And you want to build a product that is as wide, that has a wide as market as possible. And one way of doing this is take advantage of existing technologies. We've seen the NeuroSky Mindset brain-computer interface that was not designed for people with disabilities, but you can use technology like that to build a piece of assistive technology. And another really interesting technology is, you know, the iPad and iPhone. You know, rather than coming up with a custom-made computer display and stuff like that, you know, just buy an iPad and interface to that and have everything on there. It makes it a lot, you can get to market a lot quicker. And some people have actually done that. And I talked about Robert Van Etten, and we should call him Bob, but there's actually the other acceptable term for this group of people is little people. And he was actually the president of an organization called Little People of America. And little person is correct. Okay. So we're going to do, who is disabled? We're going to do one example. And just for review, Disability is defined as a health condition or physical impairment that prevents an individual from taking full advantage of life's opportunities, such as education, vocation, recreation, and activities of daily living. So what I'm going to do now is give you a description of somebody, a short description, and you tell me, we're going to have a discussion on if you think this person is disabled or not. Okay? Everybody ready? A 70-year-old Englishman with ALS cannot walk, talk, or personally perform any of the usual activities of daily living. He has only very limited volitional control of one finger and one facial muscle. Now, just the students. I know if you've been here last year, I've used the same example, so I don't want you to spoil things. Okay, students, what do you think about the disability ability of this person? We'll call on Cindy first. He's pretty disabled, as a matter of fact. And just looking at this one sentence and nothing else, you'd say this is a pretty disabled person, can't do anything for themselves at all, right? Everybody agree with that? Well, okay. Okay, next sentence. This individual employs a power wheelchair for his mobility. Okay, what do you make of that? So combine these two. These are two descriptions. You say he's maybe a little less disabled than you originally thought because he can control his own mobility. Mobility is a huge issue. I mean, if you can't get around on your own, you have to rely on other people to do it for you. So the fact that he has the ability to get around on his own is pretty major. Okay? Everybody agree? Next one. This individual employs a speech output communication device to facilitate his communication. Comments? So now he can talk, right? He can communicate, right? Is that a big issue? Of course it is. Of course. Okay. Ready for the kicker? This individual, Stephen Hawking, often described as the smartest person alive. Is that sort of blow your mind? How can a person who is considered the smartest person alive be so disabled? What makes a difference between a guy like Stephen Hawking here floating in zero gravity and a person with severe disability? What makes the difference? I'll give you a hint. It's in the title of the course. Come on. Albert knows. What's the name of the course? This course. What? Assistive technology. Assistive technology makes a difference in this person's life from being a person who's lying in bed all day and not moving around or talking to anybody to being considered the smartest person alive. Isn't that awesome? That he can write books and talk to people and express his mind because of assistive technology? You see what it can do? Okay. So we already answered the first question. What makes the difference between ability and disability? It could be an assistive technology device. It could be a major factor in a person's quality of life. The other thing that we can see from this is that if you're given limited or incomplete information, you may not be able to make an accurate determination of a person's ability. If you just saw Stephen Hawking, you know, without his stuff there, you would say, you know, this guy, you know, he can't contribute to society, but with assistive technology, he can. So I think we can even take this a step further in saying that even looking at a person, you know, initially, you can't make a fair determination of how smart they are or not. I mean, I don't know if you guys are smart or not. I mean, how do I know? Just by looking at you. Okay, you're at Stanford. Okay, that counts for something, but, you know, not everything. I don't know. So, in this case, so what makes, how do I know that you're smart? What can you do to convince me that you're smart? Communicate. Who said that? Okay, you get a piece of chocolate. Communicate. How is your future employer going to know that you're smart? Communicate. How am I going to know if you're smart or not and deserve that A or not? You're going to have to talk to me, okay? Here are other conditions affecting communication that influence how a person is viewed. If you have a traumatic brain injury, well, there might be a physical injury there, like Senator Giffords. She has a brain injury. She's a senator. She's going to continue to be a senator. So even with her brain injury and her limited way of communicating, she's going to be senator. Okay. PTSD, if you have a neurological condition, you can look totally fine, but you might have really big problems inside there that can affect you. And there's other psychological factors that can affect you. What happens if you happen to be a very shy person and you just don't like to communicate? Well, people aren't going to know if you're smart or not. Now, what if that shyness includes the fear of social embarrassment, that you're afraid to talk, maybe afraid to talk in class, engage in discussions? Okay? Do you get it? Okay. So, on Thursday, we're going to have Debbie Kenny. She's an OT that I work with at the VA. And she's going to be talking about her perspective as an OT on working as a team to bridge gaps between consumers and products. And she's going to bring along some of her students who have had a stroke, and she's going to interview them. So stay tuned for that. It's always good. Today we're going to have Gail Curtis talk, and we're going to do that after a short break. So come on down, sign in if you haven't done that. Have a cookie if you haven't done that. These cookies have special ingredients that facilitate discussion in class, okay? Second. Okay. Oh, sorry. I think there's some other students who are also interested in working with you on stuff. Yeah.
When are you going to ask them to engage?
Students are selecting their teams right now. They've given me their project preferences, and the next thing is for them to sort of get together those who have common interests and form teams. They'll be talking to you. That's their initiative to talk to you. Excuse me? Yeah.
this.
This may be useful.
Okay.
Maybe see
this.
That's right. Well, we'll see. We have a big crowd. Oh yeah, I want that.
Okay.
All right. Good. You ready?
Yep. Okay. Let's get started again. Here's Gail. He's a design consultant in the area here, specializing in user interface architecture and design strategy for online ventures and interactive products. Recently, he was the principal interaction designer at Yahoo, and earlier in his career, he was a creative director for information architecture at Vivid Studios, and has led the interaction design and user experience architecture for several years at startups. At Stanford, he taught courses in product design and human computer interface design. Is most recently a part of a teaching team at the B School. At Yahoo, he developed a practice area in strategic ideation and disseminated it through workshops in the U.S. and Asia. Let's welcome back Gail Curtis.
Thank you. Thank you, Dave. It's great to be here. I see this. They said there are only 12 students signed up. And I thought, well, this is a much bigger crowd. So it's good to see everybody here. And it's good to see so many people just from the community and the project advocates. I'm glad to see you in the room. So my topic is going to be slightly different from what was posted on the syllabus page for the course. I think I put something up there about design thinking. And I mean, how many people here are familiar with this idea of design thinking? I mean, probably, you know, anyone that's kind of around Stanford these days and engineering, you know, it's a very current topic. And when I was a student, we just called that design process. I mean, this is how you just thought about it. But what was, I mean, because I went through the Stanford product design program, and what was unique about how we approached doing design of products was that we started off looking at the people that were going to use the product, the people that wanted the products. And that, you know, the very first phase of any product development process was to do need finding, was to just get out and understand who are the users, what is their life like, you know, what's really going on with them around this product area. And I see that this whole idea has been it's a very big theme in most of the things that are going on in the D School and in many other programs in the university here. And I think, actually, it's a secret of, you know, it's kind of a secret of success for a lot of products. They say product, there are two kind of like two sources or drivers of innovation. And one is you've got a hot new technology and you have a new technology that comes up with a new way to solve a problem that's out there. It does it cheaper, better, faster, smaller. And then what we see, if we look at a lot of new products that come out, a product comes along that actually arises out of a better understanding of the problem. You know, people need to, you know, you think people need a better way to get books. But then you really understand, you know, it's not about getting books, it's just about reading. And so you've got e-readers and other things like that. So that's not a big leap, but in a lot of areas, you know, people find sources or sparks of innovation coming out of a better understanding of the problem. So what I'd like to do today is, it's not so much about what I'm going to say, but we will have some little workshop groups. Everybody here will cluster around some groups of four or five people and talk about, well, how, you know, given one of the project areas that were introduced last week, how would you go about finding out what's really needed? What's really going on? What is the person trying to do? What are the limitations that they have? what's really important to them in accomplishing that? What are the constraints of the situation that they're working in? So how are we going to ask those questions, and then who are you going to talk to? You know, you're talking about Fernando's sailboat, you know, talk specifically. Well, who are you going to talk to find out? You realize, okay, these are the things that we want to know. Well, then how are we going to find out, and how are we going to do that? All this is sort of an idea that when you kind of form your own group, you got a way, okay, you know, have something in mind that, okay, our first step is we're going to have to find the right people to talk to and talk to them, watch the situations that they're in, find some way to kind of connect with them, to get an understanding, as we say, build some kind of empathy with the situation. So, given the time we have, so I'm going to talk just a little bit about needs and need finding, and we'll do this exercise, and then in the end, what would be great is that then we can go around everything that says, okay, here are the top three, four questions that we thought should be asked about this one. And probably a lot of them will be the same. So maybe just in the interest of time, as we go to the next one, you say, okay, we had all those plus this one. The next one say, we had all those plus this one. We'll kind of work something like that. So what I would like is we have till 5:30 for the class. So we'll leave the last 10 minutes for that presentation, which means that we have 30 minutes now. So I will go through my slides here to give you kind of an overview. How many people are familiar with this pyramid, this understanding? Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of need. So it turns out he published this in an article in 1943. And looking at, you know, that as people, we have needs that are, they're not all the same. They're not all equally important. And he sort of identified these kind of categories of need, but then also presented the idea that, you know, we need to satisfy, you know, the needs at the bottom before we can comfortably, you know, deal with the ones that are higher. So if you can't breathe, right, you're not thinking about self-actualization too much, right? You want to solve that. Or if you're feeling, you know, unsafe, threatened, physically threatened, you want to resolve those. But life is not just about these things. You know, it's kind of like the people that criticize, you know, poor people. Says, I heard of these poor people, they have televisions. You know, how can they be poor and still have a television? I mean, it's like life is bigger than just, you know, the numbers of satisfying, you know, physiological and safety needs. That, you know, our needs for, in this article, they describe it, love and belonging, of, you know, feeling that you're related to people and connected to people, and a need for self-esteem that you want to feel that you're, you know, realize your value. So, for example, we had the project came up of the, which Dave characterized as Pimp My Chair, right? A way to make, you know, all wheelchairs look, well, about four or five different ways, right? But, you know, users of wheelchairs would like a way to make them more personalized and more expressive instruments. So this is not about getting around. This is about, you know, showing off, you know, I belong, you know, I'm cool. I'm like a cool person. You know, I can have flaming, you know, red sparks coming out of my chair. Or, you know, I know the difference from that. You know, this is more about my personality and I'm doing something. So you can kind of express something here. So once you can kind of get around, you're thinking about, maybe I can do some other things. So given that, here's a model we have sort of worked with, which is that given this kind of hierarchy of needs, the five levels of needs, I sort of thought about these other things, which I ended up calling vectors, which are really maybe facets, maybe dimensions of life, or there's something, but I like the term vector because it's a sense that it's an active direction. So say mobility is a vector of our life. And within each one of these vectors, you know, we have certain needs that we want to move, and we have certain capabilities that enable us to satisfy that move. And So, you know, if we're mobile because we can walk, we can do that. We're calling. But, you know, we probably can't fly. So we deal with walking, and we develop other things that enable us to fly. And if a person has lost the ability to walk, there are other technologies there that basically provide that capability. So part of the idea of, you know, as you're thinking about your project area, thinking about what are the needs around that, is to thinking about what, you know, if it's a mobility related thing, you know, what is not only the need to just move around, but there's other needs that kind of are part of that, and how do we satisfy that? What other capabilities can we bring into place to satisfy those needs? I'm thinking particularly about in this area of perception, say, if we are, you know, we walk into a room and there are friends there and we kind of nod and you know, say hi or something, or somebody ignores us. So we get all these cues about that are kind of related to our belongingness and our esteem in the social interaction. But a person that has a severe visual impairment is blind. You know, having somebody nod at them doesn't have any value, right? So, but someone who's blind walks into the room, we say, you know, hi, Charlie, or we do something to acknowledge that, right? Because, again, we want to acknowledge that, yes, they're part of our group, they're part of our society, we're related to them. So we think about, you know, given the need for this, what other capabilities can we bring into play to satisfy the need? So that's an example. So we have the need that, you know, walking into the room, we think, well, what else can we do? And if we just look at what people do now, you know, we kind of get some clues. So that's kind of like what's behind this model, which is that once you sort of think about, you know, we want the sailboat, right, if we can move, you know, think about, well, what all is going on with the person riding that sailboat? It's more than just being able to stay in a chair, right? I mean, she wants to be on the water. She wants to be out with her friends and those people. And, you know, there are all kinds of needs that are being satisfied by doing that. And we think about, well, what are all the capabilities that can be brought into play to satisfy that? So this is all kind of just a framework for thinking about when you're thinking about, okay, you're going to talk to the person that's related to this project. What is it that you're really trying to know? You know, and it's probably, I would like to suggest, it's not how big should the seat be, right? It's not about numbers, right? How many times do you go sailing? It's not about that. It's more about why are you doing this? You know, what's important in doing this activity? You know, what's important in being where you are, being out on the water? What's important about being with these people? And try to understand both, you know, kind of like the individual's goals, what are they trying to get out of it? And their values, which is like what's important. It's important that this should be fun, that it should be comfortable, that whatever's helping me should not be, you know, we could look at obvious, you know, wind deflector thing. Okay, yeah, we could develop this big, you know, umbrella machine that we could attach onto a chair. And, you know, it weighs about 30 pounds, but, you know, it'll do the job. Well, you look at, you know, you look at the way Aubrey drives that chair. She's not going to be interested in that, right? So what's important to her is that it should be sharp, it should be fast. I mean, I'm making this up, right? You know, talk to her, right? So you want to know, but what's important about, you know, the design solution that you're looking at? What are the kind of like the design values there? And then so like these kind of four dimensions, what are the goals, what are they trying to do, values, what's important to them, capabilities, what are the things they, resources and things that they've got they can use, and the constraints, which is what are the limitations. And it's not, maybe it's not their physical limitations, but I, you know, okay, I got to go off-road on my wheelchair, right? So I'm doing stuff that requires me to go out into the bush. How can I do? So the constraints there are just something in the environment. Okay. So any questions about, let me go back to this. I mean, there may be lots of questions, but any questions about this that I could try to entertain about? This is just kind of a framework for where to start talking. Yeah. Yes, Dave.
How much of this is the interviewer expected to observe versus how much the interviewee knows about themselves? I mean, could the interviewee answer all the questions that you ask them, or is it something that you have to sort of pull from that individual, observe yourself?
Anybody here had experience kind of with interviewing or doing ethnography or? Good. So one is we hope that you will chime in your group and offer that, but it's actually both. And, you know, we're doing this exercise now, but for the project, you know, you can kind of get into more resources for now. I mean, I'm getting to the answer to your question, but at the end of the slides here, there are some links to about 3 or 4 or 5 handouts that are kind of related to need finding, observation, interview, and give some detailed tips on how to do that. It's kind of out of scope for us to kind of get into that now. But there, I had this great one that was from a course that was done a couple of years ago called Design for Agile Aging, and which gave specific things about interviewing older people. And, you know, the important thing is not, again, how many times do you go out on the sailboat, you know? It's not about that. It's about building an empathy and connection with the person and asking them open-ended questions to sort of let them tell you what's going on. So you're doing both. And probably it's good, you know, to be in teams of two talking to people because one person could be taking notes and another person is really maintaining the connection with the person. Because you want to not only just listen to the words they say, but you want to try to really understand what's going on. And, or at least to have more understanding of what's going on beyond, you know, what's in the, you know, the brief. And so I was just looking at these and I thought that they were pretty great. So this is just a start. When I say what questions to ask, you know, I realize that it's really not, you know, it's really what we want to know. And we usually say that, well, what questions again? But it's not how many times do you do this in a month. It's about why are you doing this? What, you know, again, what's important? If you ask Deborah with the dog walking the dog with the wheelchair, if you said, you know, you might think, oh, we can make a little robot that could walk the dog. Well, it's my guess is that, no, it's not about getting her dog out. You know, she wants to be with that dog and go out. And, you know, it's about there's a connection, there's a shared activity. So it's kind of really understanding that. It's going beyond the words, right? Does that make sense? So what I would like to suggest is that, you know, groups of 4 or 5 are going to be kind of practical for today. And just, I know you all have your own ideas that you've thought about what you want to work on. So this is not the scope of these this grouping exercise is just for today in class. And even if you're not, if you're just sitting in, please participate in this exercise because, you know, everybody will have some ideas and a new perspective on this. So I would like to suggest, say, you know, you 5 people there, just kind of turn around and form a little cluster to work on. And what I would like to suggest is, I'll just run through this outline, is form a group, quickly share, you know, the ones, the projects that you saw, which ones you want to work on. Now, if we happen to have several of the project advocates here, so why not, if that person, Bernadette, is here, you know, sailboat, well, talk about her project, right? And, you know, take a few minutes to share, you know, what you're doing. And then once you're in there, you know, what do you want to know about the user? What kind of questions do you want to ask? How are you going to ask those questions? Who are the people that you want to talk to? What do you, if you're going to observe, what do you want to see? Like you're going with Fernanda, out on, you know, do you, could you do this without going out on the boat with her, for example? And, you know, being engineers, we like to make stuff, right? So you think, well, what kinds of things, you know, we would like to make at least a sketch this, you know, would something like this work, or maybe this, or you make a cardboard mock-up or something like that. So that'll come later, but you... you know, it'll be natural to be thinking, you probably have already thought, oh yeah, we can solve that problem by this thing. You know, we probably already have these ideas, so those can come there. And I want to leave this slide up here now while we're working. I've also are kind of like, have the little short cheat sheet list for brainstorming. And then at the end, when we get down to almost time, then we'll do a little, just kind of look a little round robin, hear what people had to come up with. Okay? So please try and cluster now, and I can sort of help it. If anybody wants to leave, because, yeah, go ahead. So you guys can go. I don't know if you guys want to talk together. Yeah. That's all right. You guys. Well, you guys can get together. All right. You four there. You know, maybe you guys, if you guys are interested, maybe work with these guys or not. You're welcome to pass. If you don't want to get into this, that's fine. Hi.
I'm Lane Levin.
Hi, Lane.
I've been sitting in a day class for about 5 years. Love it. I have a book, right? And I don't know which class. I know there are classes on financial side of getting a product to work.
Uh-huh.
That's my biggest challenge right now. So that's a real challenge.
Uh-huh.
So right now, one thing is to start and my design partner wants to look at that.
This is kind of, you might say, a chronic problem with, you know, in this, these, you know, these kind of devices for all the reasons that Dave in that slide said. And I'm thinking there are things that are getting funded, right? There are startups that are getting funded. I mean, but they're not in assistive technologies, right? There are other things. Right. Yeah. You know, see, I think this should be like a follow-on class. Right? Marketing, assistive tech, or, you know, something like that. Or maybe it's we should propose this to Dave, right? Or maybe it's there's sort of like a product fair, right? Where and it doesn't have to be student projects, you know, it could be, you know, you got something, but to get people, because like you say, you know, there are people out there with money that would be willing if they knew about it, and my guess is if there was some confidence that there was some sound business thinking behind this idea, right? Not that this would be cool or it's so great for Jack who needs this thing, right? You know, you want to see, you know, what's the business model? How is this going to actually make money? And because as much as people with money like to engage in philanthropic things, you know, nobody likes to just see money, you know, not well spent, let's say, right?
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Before I hear from, before I go around and ask everybody about what your group came up with, I want to show you on one of these, there'll be links to these three or four or five handouts related to neat finding. One of them I found was this, had all these cartoons about six things to remember when observing what people do, which were all kind of fun and interesting. You know, listen to people's personal stories. Distinguish between needs and solutions. Actually, let me add here parenthetically, you know, sometimes in our culture we make a distinction between I need that versus I want that. And we think, okay, needs are important, wants are negotiable. But I think from the point of view of a product development process, it's really important to treat them all the same. That is, a want is a need, and it's probably just a need of a higher level, right? A need for belonging or self-expression or esteem. And so take that as seriously as don't distinguish, you know, oh, I just wanted to be able to fly. Well, think about why should it be flying? And note the contradiction between what people say and what they do. Cast aside your biases and listen and observe. So anyway, these... I thought this was entertaining. It's in the handout on the neat finding crib sheet. And they're worth... Actually, let me just go that. They're all listed on this deck here, which you'll have access to. So I would like to go around and get a quick, like, two-minute report from each group before we wrap. And I would like to start with here. And so what I suggest is, say, what if this is the project that we talked about. Here are the, you know, top three or four key questions that we wanted to explore with the user if when we had one. And who would you want to talk to and how are you going to kind of talk to them? And then as we go around, you know, a lot of the questions, there may be a lot of overlap of the questions. So maybe think, okay, we had all those questions, but these two or three were unique to this project. Okay? So why don't you guys go ahead first? Okay. Good. Those are good questions. Okay. Terrific. Next group. So actually, that's great. So I'm going to comment here is that
One thing that happens when you start talking to the actual users, like you discover sort of refinements or enhancements or other dimensions of, you know, they said it was a transfer device, but then once you actually talk to them, you might discover some other things about that, just the way, you know, the notion of, wow, if it were transparent also, as well as keeping the rain off, then it could be used in a whole different way. And so that's important to think about, you know, even when you start talking to somebody, you know, be open to the idea of, wow, maybe this project really should be going in a different direction. Okay, so let's have you guys here. Okay, that all sounds very ambitious, and it's great, but actually the thing that I would like to point out here is that, A, if you're talking about, well, your primary user group is, you know, autistic children, well, good luck conducting an interview, right, with that person. But, and the other, so you need to talk to these other people, but also these other people are actually, in a way, users of whatever assistive technology, right? Because they're affected and they're going to be involved in, you know, procuring it, setting it up, and all that. And so, you know, their needs around the problem are also important. And once you kind of see people in a situation, you realize, oh, yeah, you know, this person always sets up that thing for that person. So let me find out what's going on with that dimension also. Okay, in the back, do you guys want to offer a couple? Yeah. So actually, so that's great, and that I So one thing that's interesting about this one is that this is an area where you're going to talk to people about this, that, you know, being able to sketch things in real time or have things to show, you know, what about something like, you know, what about something like, what about, what is it about this that doesn't work for you? You know, there's much, people will talk about, like, what's important or why it's bad or something, you know, if they can have something concrete to look at rather than just in the abstract. You know, what is it about this that you don't like? You know, well, show them something. And also, certainly, in the design process, you know, once you start talking to somebody, well, then, you know, the next week, go back with three or four little mock-ups, and does this get at that idea? Then the other thing is that maybe it isn't this, yeah, this thing that's sort of advertised, I am a often helpless person, right? And I have to wear this thing all the time, right? Think about some other way. Maybe there's some other way that, what does that thing actually do? You know, it gives you a way to manually signal, I need someone to help me. And maybe there's another way to do it. Maybe it's a ring. I don't know. Just, so that's another way you can kind of explore a different way to kind of package that technology. Okay, you guys here.
So our project that we talked about was improving the key, how it hasn't changed in the past 100 years. And so one question that we had is, are there existing alternatives that basically increase your mobility? Why do people choose the key over other existing solutions? Mm-hmm.
So this is great. So now this raises the point that, you know, the cane is such a ubiquitous device, and people with all kinds of, you know, there's like a number of reasons. It's not just one reason that someone uses a cane. I mean, and they do that. So this is a situation where, you know, in a way, as you start talking to people, you know, here's a person that's just recovering from an illness or, you know, a mobility problem, and they need some temporary assistance versus someone that has been using it, you know, that somehow for some reason this is just a part of their, you know, their way of life, and they need something that kind of augments their lifestyle or their fashion or something like that. So this is where talking to people, this concept of persona, which is you sort of paint a little picture of, okay, Charles, you know, used the cane because he broke his foot, but he's using it only for a few months. And what's important to Charles is that, you know, it be light and mobile and he can get it into his car because he knows he's going to go back to driving, right? Whereas Alice has been using a cane, you know, for the last 20 years and because she has, you know, a short leg or, you know, whatever. Because, again, like the goal, you know, what people want from them, these two are different. And maybe you don't come up with a solution that satisfies both. You know, maybe there's a solution for this person and then there's like a different solution for that person, and that's fine, right? We don't have to, like, the solution doesn't have to be like the universal solve everything. But maybe there's a way to kind of differentiate it. So anyway, the point of that is to think about characterizing your user, and sometimes there's like two distinct segments of the user population to think about. And because once you say you don't have to solve the thing for Alice, the 40-year cane user, you can focus on this person, then all of a sudden that constraint, you know, opens up new possibilities. Okay, thank you. All right, you guys here, you are the mega group. So what are you working on?
So we were working on the pedal, or I'm sorry, the piano pedal.
Ah.
So we asked a lot of questions. The first one was kind of, why did he even play piano in the first place? Like, just judging from his musical ability, you can tell that he has been really practicing for many years. And is that because he loves, like, the aesthetic quality of the music, or is he kind of, like, performing for other people? And kind of just gleaming his answers from that, you can kind of see whether you want a product that might be just more for himself and his own use, or something that maybe, if he plays in a lot of like concerto halls, for some example, something that might be more invisible. Some other questions we asked was kind of, when does he use the pedal? Does he use it kind of when it's like written, explicitly written in the sheet music, or is it more of a nuanced thing where he just kind of feels, okay, like right here, this note would be perfect if it was a key longer, and that's when he uses it. So it's just kind of an idea of like whether we want it to be something that's voluntary, like voluntary as an extension of himself and his own, I guess, body in some manner, or whether we want it to be more of, I guess, like a synthesizer or some kind of like software product that could predict like the next note he'll play. I don't know exactly how that's going to work out, but something along those lines. And then I think we also have some more questions.
Oh, I guess we also just discussed who else we would talk to, like other pianists and also like piano makers and just like a lot of people.
Yeah. So. Okay, so I think, so the interesting idea here is, are you designing for a very personalized device that's an extension of that individual person? And if you're doing that, you know, maybe that's just thing is just like a little a thing that, you know, goes on his elbow or something. Or are you designing something that's basically has a broader application or can be used more generally, or maybe there's a version of that that becomes like an adaptable tool, or even for, you know, a person that could use a paper pedal, maybe this elbow thing actually works better. You know, they make different kinds of music if they can do it. You know, they don't need... So, this is kind of a thing, you know, in a design, from a design approach thing, you know, look at these, maybe look at these kind of two extremes. If we're going to do this, I mean, in your brainstorming, right, design sketching, if it's going to be a personalized thing, you know, it could be this. But if we want to be like a more generalized product, that's just another enhancement to a keyboard musical instrument, then maybe we might do this and this and this. And, you know, kind of be exploring that. And then that's when you also then you go back to that guy and you can show him some things and start playing around with things. Right? But also get the feedback from him. You say, you know, you talk to the other people that use keyboards, you know, maybe there's things to learn there. So, anyway, so that's about personalized versus generalized. And this is kind of part of the design space. Okay, in the back.
We were working on the Sailboat CD. Most important thing that we realized in this project was that it's the experience that matters. So, the activity that is safe involves not just interviewing and observing, but also experiencing what and experiencing with certain constraints how the difference between this experience of sailboats is varying. So understanding that whatever technology is available right now for using sailboats, how that is not sufficient, and what are the major issues? Because anything that is intrusive that requires a learning curve would basically kill the purpose of experiencing the sailboat. And so the understanding here was that what is intuitive while going using a sailboat and a seat which is intuitive to use is important. Apart from that, what would be the safety features that would be required for such a design would be questions that we put.
So. What I like about this this whole idea or the things that you said was that, so here's the situation where like the constraints are really are bigger in the situation than the constraints of the user, right? The limitations, because on a boat, everything has to work You know, everything fit, you know, ship shape, right? Everything has to fit in a different way, and better, everything fulfills three or four different purposes, right? while it's there, right? And so the mechanical and the physical constraints of the thing really drive a lot of design. So you're trying to think how to make something fit into that environment while still, you know, meeting the human need of the sailor, right? And so those are great challenges. I mean, one thing that's nice is that, you know, once you get on a boat and you go sailing, you know, go out sailing with her or something, right? Then all you see, oh, that pulley there, it does this and this and this, but it doesn't do that. You know, once you start seeing the stuff that's there and how it all works, you know, my experience as a designer is that I start getting really different ideas than I do just sitting in my room drawing sketches, right? That being there and being kind of in the environment and the wind and the water and flying, it kind of can be very inspirational. Yeah? Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I can't wait for those to come try it out.
All right. Okay, last group over here.
So we also did the cane, and the questions that we came up with were fairly open-ended. The first one is, could you tell us a story of a time you've had difficulty? Not necessarily involving the cane. In fact, specifically not mentioning the cane in question, but just to see what they come up with. In addition, we want to ask about something they'd like to do that's simple and something they'd like to do that's just crazy, and see if we can come up with a solution for the crazy thing. The final question is if they would demonstrate walking around the room. So see exactly how they use the cane, whether they need for balance, whether they need to support a slightly bigger leg.
So this is great. So I like the idea that, you know, you've got looking at also the like kind of like two extremes of use, but you know, walking around the room, and then I would sort of add to that, you know, not just walking around the room, but you know, following around, you know, going to the store or some, you know, bigger things like how do they navigate, you know, going through doorways or in crowds or, you know, all these things that, again, they wouldn't think, because chances are, you know, a long time, they have all these workarounds, right? They have all kinds of things that they do to deal with, okay, a sliding door is going to do this, so I'll do that, that they wouldn't even think about, oh, yeah, I do this. But you're there, you have fresh eyes, and you're going to see things. So just being able to follow them, even through some more complex environments, can be really informative. So, okay, so this is all I have. And actually, so David's request, and I would like, you know, whatever your list is, send that to send it to Dave, and he'll sort of compile it. That way, you know, everybody can kind of take advantage of the thinking that all the other groups did, and maybe you'll see some ideas that are related to your project. And thank you for playing along with this. Okay.
Thank you, Gail.
Yeah.
Just a couple of things. I'm sorry we went over, but it was interesting. Hope you agree. And the other thing is that, you know, all the lecture audio and all the slides are posted on the website. So you can refer to that if you forgot something. And thanks again for sticking around.